All right. Hello, and welcome to another MANCAD BAA Audiology podcast. MANCAD, or Manchester Centre for Audiology and Deafness, is at the University of Manchester, and I'm Gabby Saunders. I'm a Senior Research Fellow at MANCAD, and I moderate these podcasts. We want them to support ongoing learning, and right now, during COVID-19, we're particularly focusing on topics that have some pertinence to the practice of audiology or to people with hearing loss under the current circumstances. But we are going to continue these podcasts on into the future, and over time we'll adjust the topics to make sure we're addressing things that are on the forefront of audiology, so the podcasts remain of interest going forward. We'll have a new podcast each month, and we'll post the audio recording along with the transcript onto our University of Manchester web pages. And you can find the information. If you search for MANCAD Audiology, you should find your way there. And later on, at the end, I'll give you a URL. But on to today. Our speaker today is Dr. Sam Kuth. He's a lecturer at the University of Manchester at MANCAD. And he's going to be answering a few questions that I'm going to pose to him on a topic that he has picked, which is, he's titled, Quiet Time During Lockdown. Is it really a chance for our ears to rest? But before I begin with the questions, I'm going to hand you over to Sam, and he's going to tell us a little bit about himself. Sam.
Thank you, Gabby. Thanks very much for having me today. So I should just say straight off the bat, I'm not an audiologist, so full disclosure there. So my background's more in psychology and cognitive neuroscience, which is what I did my degree in here at the University of Manchester quite a good number of years ago now. And then following my degree, I went on to do a PhD looking at multisensory integration. So I was looking at vision, touch and hearing and how we combine these senses and how this process is affected by the aging process. And then following my PhD, I went on to look at neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease. And we were looking at ways of using technology to try and detect these diseases as early as possible. And then I took a complete sidestep into audiology, I suppose. And I started looking at a project looking at hearing health in musicians, which is, I'm going to kind of talk a little bit about that today. And recently started my lectureship at the end of 2019.
Okay, thank you. Well, it's an interesting time to have started your lectureship.
Yes.
Because everything is now disrupted. but anyway, let's move on now to the questions. So clearly in, I think, pretty much everyone's experience, life during lockdown has indeed been quiet. But what made you then wonder whether this is a chance for our ears to rest? And so what if our ears have rested?
Yeah, so I suppose to kind of put it into a bit of context, why I came up with this title is we've recently been doing a study which is looking at early career musicians and their hearing health. And it's a longitudinal study in that we've been getting students from the Royal Melbourne College of Music to come into our labs. And we've been doing a very comprehensive test battery with them year on year for up to 3 years. And as part of this battery as well, we've been doing a semi-structured interview with them, something called a noise exposure structured interview, to try and get an idea of the amount of noise exposure that they've had across their lifetime. It's a very methodical and systematic process you go through to try and get an estimate of the amount of noise exposure they've had. And what we wanted to do was see cumulatively year on year if the amount of noise exposure they've had is related to any change in their hearing that we might see over these 3 years. And we've just recently finished collecting data for this. Fortunately, just before the start of lockdown, it's kind of at the back end of last year that we finished collecting data. We've recently just published the findings from the baseline of the longitudinal study, so time point one. And we're just in the process of analysing the data for the longitudinal study. But the reason I kind of, coming back to the title of today's talk, the reason I chose that is I was thinking if this study had gone on longer, so if we were still collecting data now, and I got participants in pre-lockdown and post-lockdown, and we were trying to look at changes in their hearing, very subtle changes in their hearing, and then also wondering how much noise exposure they've had. Obviously, with no clubs being open, no concerts, no sporting events. And for our musicians, they're not necessarily rehearsing in large ensembles and what have you. We might expect the amount of noise exposure that they've had is really drastically reduced. So what would we see? What would happen to their hearing as a result of this quiet time? And that's kind of where I've got to with this title. And it got me thinking about this. And I suppose I've kind of come up with three different possibilities. The first one is kind of a positive thing, this quiet time. So the idea is that because we're not being exposed to these loud events and we're not going out clubbing and that sort of thing, it gives us a chance for our ears to just rest. So we're not getting more cumulative noise exposure. So the level of damage that we may have done to our hearing up until lockdown might have been going up and up and up, and then suddenly it's going to plateau when we've hit this quiet time, and then maybe after lockdown it might start going up again. But it gives us a period where there's no further damage. And there's been some research on this recently in an animal study. I think it was Liu et al. 2020, just earlier this year. And they showed that noise exposure can be cumulative. The effect that it can have on hearing can be cumulative, in particular to cochlear synapses. So yeah, as I say, we might be having a bit of a quiet time. So it's just basically a nice little period of time for our ears to have a rest before we give them more of an onslaught after lockdown. So that's scenario one.
So that's scenario, not recovery, that's just nothing. That's not recovery.
This is where I'm coming on to notes. So point two is potentially there could be some recovery. So rest and recovery. So there's been a few guinea pig studies, Shi et al. 2013, and they were again looking at cochlear synapses. And it seems to suggest that after a period of noise exposure and some damage to these synapses, that there may be a little bit of recovery afterwards. And given that humans have quite a good propensity for synaptic plasticity, we might see a bit more repair of these synapses in humans. So there's potential for rest and recovery here. And this is interesting because in our lab, we've been looking at or trying to look at the health of cochlear synapses in humans using electrophysiology. And we've not really seen any evidence to suggest that there's been cochlear synaptopathy or damage to the synapses in young, normal hearing humans. And it possibly is because we recover a lot better than animals. So perhaps even the ears are a little bit more resilient. So that's scenario two. We get rest and recovery from lockdown. Now, scenario three is a little bit more complicated. And it's based on the idea that a little bit of noise exposure is actually a good thing for our ears. And it helps us to develop a tolerance or toughening to sound over time. So if suddenly we're not being exposed to noise anymore because of lockdown measures, we're not going out clubbing, we're not going to concerts, festivals have all been postponed for this year, then potentially we're going to lose this tenacity and it can make our ears particularly vulnerable when we suddenly can start going back to gigs again after lockdown finishes. So I've found a paper which is nearly 30 years old now, which I'm actually going to talk about more next week at the Journal Club next Friday. This was by Miyakita and colleagues from 1992. And they showed that a low level amount of noise exposure, if you, I think it was for 6 hours a day, if you expose people to this noise, it can reduce the amount of temporary threshold shift in response to a high intensity noise. But the interesting thing is that after a few days after you stop this training, you see that the temporary threshold shift returns to its normal levels again. So it kind of supports this idea that once you've stopped training your ears and you've stopped exposing them to noise, they might become more vulnerable again to high intensity noise.
Wow. So how would that work? What's the mechanism of this, you know, the toughening bit? Is there any theory on that?
It's not fully known. So in this 1992 paper, they don't really offer any mechanisms as to how it works. They just kind of presented the evidence. And I think there was a couple of animal studies that came before that had shown something similar. From kind of having a look around in the literature, I think there's a few different possibilities. So one is strengthening of this stapedius muscle in the middle ear. So there was a study with Swedish rock musicians, and it seemed to suggest that over time, these sorts of musicians strengthen the stapedius muscle, basically through years of training, and that muscle just getting used over and over again, you get a strengthening of it. But I think it may take a number of years for this to develop. So it probably wouldn't fit with that Miyakita study where after a couple of days, they're seeing a reduction in the temporary threshold shift. I think it would take a number of years for this to be true. So that's one possibility. The other thing as well, I think basically I don't think it would protect the ears that much. If you've got a stronger stapedius muscle, it'll increase the strength of the middle ear muscle reflex. But I don't think it would protect you from really high intensity noise. So then the next possibility is that there's an increase of the medial olivocochlear reflex strength. So there's been a couple of studies on this more recently. As for Walpole and colleagues in 2014, they showed a reduction in temporary threshold shifts in humans who have stronger MOCRs, medial olivocochlear reflexes. So the idea here is that you have more noise exposure, which increases afferent activity up the auditory brainstem, and then you get a kind of like a feedback down through the efferent system, which reduces the motility of the outer hair cells. So you kind of, it's a feedback loop, more noise, and then you kind of get like a feedback where it turns down the volume in the cochlea for you. So then you're not getting as much noise being sent up the brainstem again. So it's kind of a protective effect. And there was a study on this in 2017 as well by Bart, and they showed that people with more noise exposure actually have an increased MOCR as well. They predicted it would actually go the other way. So they predicted that people with more noise exposure would have a reduced reflex. I think their thinking was that if you had damage to the auditory nerve, then you wouldn't be able to get as much signal going into this system, and therefore you would get less feedback. The volume, it all gets a bit complicated, but I think they were trying to say that the volume wouldn't be able to be turned down as much. But in fact, it looks like it's the other way around. So that's the second possibility. One more is a study that came out earlier this year with Fan et al, where they were looking at cochlear synapses in, I think it was mice. No, it was guinea pigs, sorry. And they seem to show that with more noise exposure, the synapses can actually strengthen a little bit and may be less susceptible to a higher intensity noise later on. So a similar sort of concept, but rather than working via the MOCR, it's working directly on the on the synapses themselves.
Interesting. So I'm going to go off script here. So we have, one mechanism whereby two mechanisms whereby quiet is good for our ears, mm-hmm. and one potential mechanism where quiet is bad for our ears. Presumably they're not mutually exclusive, or would you say they are? In other words, how would they all fit together, all these three things?
Yeah, it's difficult to say. I think there's probably a very fine line, because in order to get this toughening, you've got to have a certain level of noise. But then once you go beyond that sort of level of noise, it's obviously just going to be damaging to the ears. So there's got to be like a kind of a sweet spot where the sound is good for you potentially, and then if you go too far, it's not going to be good for you, and if it's not enough, then it's not going to develop this potential toughening. So I think they're definitely not mutually exclusive. I think there is some sort of common factor, and in terms of the mechanisms as well, if you think about if you are toughening up the synapses, cochlear synapses themselves, this might increase the afferent signal going up the auditory brainstem, which could then increase the efferent signal coming back. So there are a couple of different mechanisms which could be working simultaneously here, or working alongside each other.
Interesting. Okay. So you said that in the one study, the toughening lasted for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Am I right in that?
So that's correct. Yeah.
So if this is all true, are you therefore suggesting that over this quiet period, we will have all lost any toughening that had taken place?
Well, it's kind of difficult to say, and we don't really know. Again, everything I'm saying today is all a little bit speculative, and I'm drawing on a number of different studies here. I think it may depend on a number of factors. So the first one is the amount of noise exposure that you've had before. So if you think pre-lockdown, if you were going to lots and lots of clubs and listening to lots of music and that sort of thing, you may have developed more tolerance and it may be longer lasting. So there's been a study looking at the MOCR in musicians, and musicians tend to have a greater reflex than non-musicians. And the idea may be that because they've had more years of noise exposure, this reflex has got stronger. So it might be that, yeah, depending on the amount of noise exposure you've had previously, you might have a longer lasting protective effect, and it might last however long lockdown lasts. We don't know whether it's going to go away or not, whether it's going to stay with us. I think it also probably depends on the mechanism of this toughening. So as I mentioned before, with the stapedius muscle, I think it would probably take a good number of years to develop any sort of strength in this muscle. You'd have to train it over and over. So I don't think that that would disappear very quickly. And the same with plastic changes and in the synapses, whether that's cochlear synapses or synapses from the medial olivocochlear system, I think they may be a little bit longer lasting, so they wouldn't disappear within a couple of days. So with the Miyakita study, it seems to suggest that that toughening does disappear, or the resilience does disappear after a couple of days. So maybe these mechanisms that I've suggested are not the same mechanism that they saw back in 1992 in the Miyakita study. But something to bear in mind with that study is it was done with children, which actually is kind of hard to believe because I don't think ethically you'd be able to get it through nowadays. So I think basically what they did was they asked teenagers, and they're about 13, 11 to 13 years, they asked them to listen to 6 hours of music a day at approximately 70 decibels. And then they induced a temporary threshold shift using, I think, 105 decibel noise for 10 minutes or something. It's quite, I'll talk about it more next week. I can't remember the exact ins and outs of it, but I think basically because they were doing this with quite young children who hadn't necessarily had a lot of noise exposure before that, they might not have quite had the same amount of toughening as someone who's, 20, 30, 40 years old. Which is maybe why you see this temporary threshold shift return to normal quite quickly after the training has stopped. Again, I'm speculating, but it's a possibility.
So that might suggest that there are sort of individual differences in the extent to which this may or may not happen in terms of previous noise exposure, potentially your age.
Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah, I think it's very multifaceted. The amount of noise exposure you've had in terms of lockdown, how much you had before lockdown, how much you're having during lockdown. For musicians, obviously, you'd expect that they're having more noise exposure before, and then suddenly they're not having it now. I think you also need to consider other genetic factors, such as melanin in the skin. So there's some evidence suggests that people with more melanin or dark skin and darker eye colours have more tolerance. They have a greater tolerance to noise damage than people with lighter skin. There are many, many other factors. You mentioned age as well. I think as well, when you're thinking about musicians, it's not necessarily just the noise exposure that's caused an increase in this MOCR feedback. There's also evidence suggests that it's more of a top-down influence as well. So it could be something to do with like auditory attention is modulating this effect, or some sort of enhanced auditory processing skills that they've developed through years of musical training. So it's not necessarily just noise exposure. It could also be some other sort of cognitive training effect or auditory processing effect, which is influencing this feedback loop.
So then you would argue, I suppose, that sort of noise like machinery that you really don't want, that it's just there, would be less effective than something you might actually be listening to. Is that what you're suggesting?
Possibly so, yeah. I mean, there's a bit of a debate going on around about this. There's a difference between noise-induced hearing loss and music-induced hearing loss, and whether they're going to have the same sort of effect. For one is a desired output and one is not, like factory noise or machine noise or what have you. So I'm not too sure, but I think if we knew the mechanism of this toughening, then we could say one way or another it's either noise exposure or some other sort of musical training exposure that's having an influence. But I don't think we know one way or the other.
So that brings up to me, and again, this is not what you and I talked about up front, if, you know, machine noise and such like, if I'm not mistaken, causes sort of stress. Just having unwanted noise around causes stress in the body to change. Whereas presumably music that you are choosing to listen to doesn't cause that. Mm-hmm. Would there be a link somehow or other to the stress side of things?
Possibly so. I'm not sure exactly how that would work, but the other thing as well, you've got to think with factory noise is it tends to be more impulse noise and tends to be a little less predictable. Whereas with music noise, you know what's about to happen next quite often, especially if you're a musician. Sure. So the theory is that they've got this top-down effect, which is maybe kind of modulating the amount of noise that's coming into the ear because they're expecting it to happen.
Yeah, okay. Because I'm thinking of like constant noise, like people that live next to a main road, where it is pretty standard, just ongoing. If you live near the motorway, but that causes stress. I know that.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I don't know whether that would have any effect on toughening or not, because I don't know how much noise you need. It's tricky.
Fascinating. Okay, so now I'm going to put on a clinical hat, and I'm thinking it sounds like a very dangerous message to be giving. Well, exposing yourself to noise is going to toughen your ears. I mean, it's funny because I've had research subjects say exactly that when you try to ask them, you know, do they work in noise, etc., and they'll say things like, yeah, well, I've toughened my ears by listening to lots of noise along the way. And I'm sure they didn't read any of the literature that you're talking about, but it seems a dangerous message to give people. Is that true?
I think that's completely fair to say. We can't really say anything about how protective this toughening effect is. I mean, if you go back to this Miyakita study from nearly 30 years ago, the fact of the matter is you're still seeing a temporary threshold shift, which might suggest some sort of damage. So it's not as if it's completely gone away. You're still seeing some sort of change to hearing after exposure to a loud noise. So I don't think it's fully protective. It might be offering some sort of level of protection. The other thing as well is we don't know how much noise or what level of noise is needed in order to bring about this tolerance. As I mentioned before, it could be a certain amount of noise is good for you, and then if you go 5 decibels higher, it's suddenly very, very bad for your hearing. So we can't really say whether it's a good thing or not. And thinking about these previous studies, like the Miyakita study, the level of noise that they use to toughen the ears is around about 70 decibels. But when you compare this to factory noise or going to a concert or a nightclub or what have you, which can often be over 100 decibels, I think you're probably more likely to get damage to the ears than you are going to get toughening. So I don't think there's going to be much benefit of just exposing your ears to these really, really high intensity noises. If you're trying to train your ears, I don't think that's a sensible thing to do. And in fact, I'd encourage people to actively protect their ears in those sorts of situations. So make sure you're using some earplugs if you're in those sorts of situations.
Yes. So that was going to be my last question, is should audiologists be changing the message they're currently giving regarding hearing protection?
I definitely wouldn't be giving them the message that people should be trying to toughen their ears. I don't think it's sensible at all. No, it's not a good message. I think what I'm trying to say is that it could be happening naturally. Possibly, but I'm speculating. So I wouldn't like to say, yes, we should all go and listen to a certain amount of noise because we don't know how much we need or if it does have any sort of protective effect. So yeah, I think the advice kind of stays the same. Make sure you're protecting your ears, looking after them and not exposing yourself to these extremes without any hearing protection. And coming back to this MOCR reflex as well, there's one study that suggests that actually that in itself is an indicator of noise damage. And it could potentially be, if it becomes permanent, it could lead to other effects such as tinnitus and hyperacusis, because you've turned the volume down too much, and therefore centrally within the brain, it's trying to turn the volume back up again. So yeah, it could have some sort of trade-off there. So it's not necessarily a good thing if you've got this better MOCR functioning system, not better, but stronger functioning MOCR system.
So the bottom line really is that this is a truly fascinating topic that needs more research before we really know the implications. Is that a fair summary?
That is entirely fair. Yeah, as I say, I've kind of brought together a few different studies here to kind of try and back up an idea that I've had based on being on lockdown. I mean, in hindsight, it's a wonderful thing. We would have loved to have tested a load of people's ears just before lockdown and then kind of tried to find out how much noise exposure they were having during lockdown and then test them again just before they start experiencing high levels of noise again. So once clubs are reopening and concerts are on again and festivals, it'd be nice to catch people just before they start exposing themselves to these high levels of noise again and then get them back in immediately after as well. So they would essentially be, in an ideal world, we'd have three or four time points where we would test their hearing. And so hindsight's a wonderful thing. We have actually, in our group, we've talked about running a study like this. Obviously, we wouldn't have that pre-lockdown measure, but we could try and find out how much noise exposure people have had before that. And we could try and find out how much they've had during lockdown. But we need to act pretty quickly because obviously things are starting to reopen again now. So if we're going to get a study in, we need to get it pretty quick. I know that I think there's going to be a festival in August or September up in the northeast somewhere. So they've got some bands lined up for a socially distanced music festival. So I mean, that's maybe an opportunity for us to recruit from. I don't know.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to add? This is fascinating.
But yeah, I would just like to say that I am speculating and I'm certainly not giving any advice to people here that they should be exposing themselves to dangerous levels of noise. So yeah, just make sure you're protecting your hearing still. I don't want to give off the wrong message at all.
Well, Sam, thank you. I don't think you did.
No, that's good.
It's been really eye-opening. As I mentioned earlier, if you want to ask any follow-up questions or give us feedback or share ideas about future topics for podcasts, you should send me an email. My email is on the ManCAD webpage, but it's also gabrielle.saunders, gabrielle.saunders, @manchester.ac.uk. Hope you enjoyed this discussion and we'll come back to hear our next podcast. We'll get the word out when it's ready. And until then, farewell and stay well.